today.
I will walk you through the main topic. I used to think this was a lot of information, but if you don't know that much about computer science, it's not really going to help you because all those notions are not going to make much sense. But let's just say that we're going to start we're going to learn to build a computer. So we're going to learn, you know, what are the parts that make up a computer? And that's going to be the first part of our class, up to the midterm. So the first half of the class is starting with going from physics to bits. Bits are the unit of information, the most basic element, building block of information. And so computers use bits. Bits are true and false, 0 and 1, on and off. And they're encoded by electricity. They're encoded by, you know, physically, by electricity. So we're going to talk about that. Then we'll put bits together, and we'll see, okay, let's make something a little more complicated with a robot, right? So if the weather is hot and humid, I will not go for a walk. So I have a truth. The robot tests, is it hot outside? If it is, I'm not going to go outside. Is it humid outside? If it is, I'm not going to go outside. And so how does logic, and this is a lot like just logic. If you've ever taken any kind of logic class on logic, that's what it is. It's a lot like that. Then we will talk about programming, and we will have a brief intro to Scratch next time, so you guys can get an idea about that. Then we will talk about methods of solving problems. We will look at hard problems. Hard problems are problems that you need to spend a lot of time solving. So, for example, the problem with multiplying, they had multiplying, you know, 20 numbers and seeing if they divide by 5. That's a hard problem, because if you were to multiply all the numbers on a normal calculator, probably overflow, and you'll not be able to do it. But there are fast, and, you know, some methods are better than other methods. What are some methods? In this case, we take a problem, which is, we're going to be talking about sorting our socks. So when you get, you know, when you come from the laundromat, you have a lot of socks that are, you know, unmatched. And how do you go about matching them in a way that is efficient? Okay, so we don't really have efficiency problems because you only have, you know, 7-10 pairs of socks per laundry bag. But, you know, what if you had a million or something like that? And that's just a metaphor to talk about data and, you know, data on the internet. You know, Google works with, you probably can imagine or can't, nobody can, how much data, all the data that's on the internet. That's a lot. And so we're going to be talking about that. And at some point, it becomes very important how good your method is, how fast it can run. We're going to be talking about a little bit about computation. What is calculating something? What is computing something? What does that mean? What are the ways in which we can compute things? We will talk about secret codes. How do banks, for example, you know, when you enter your password, you know, can the bank see that? Would they be able to, you know, access your account? Would they be able to steal from you? How does that work? How does that make it safe when you buy things online? How does that work? Also, how come computers can, you can make a little video using your camera and it can be huge, but then you download the software and it makes it smaller so you can upload it on YouTube. How do they do that? How does that work? How do you take a file that's very big, a video, and make it into something small and manageable that will fit on, you know, a thumb drive or wherever you need it to fit? Then we'll talk about parallel computers. Parallel computers are a very important element today because, computers get faster and faster and faster, but at some point they'll hit a threshold and they're not going to be able to be fast. And so putting a lot of computers together is what makes things very fast and powerful. And that is what actually how Google can do, you know, all their searches are so fast and they use just a ton of computers. And so we're going to see how can you do that? How can you make, you know, take a task and, you know, spread it for to a whole bunch of computers and have them work together. And then at the end, we will get a little bit into my area of research, which is artificial intelligence, computers that can learn. What does that mean? Or how good can that be? So I think that's going to be very interesting. And sometimes people have taken the theory of evolution and applied it to computer science and made a method that is inspired. We're going to see how that works. And so that's the syllabus very, very quickly. And why would we care about computers, right? Why would we want to talk about them? And that the answer is because they really are everywhere, right? So everybody in this room can use a computer. There's no question about that. But in 1977, the director of a very, very famous and important hardware company, computer company, I don't remember who it was, but he said, HP, thank you. He said, there is no reason for any individual to have a computer in his home. So somebody actually said that, and it was not very long ago. And to me, that I laughed when I saw that, because it's so crazy. We, not only everybody has at least one computer in their home, we each have like five computers on that we carry around. And so, there's so many computers. There are cell phones, our cell phone is a computer, PDAs, digital cameras, laptops, video games. So there are just a lot. And so this is a little survey that if that clicker would work, we could do. And that is, how many computers do you actually have on you now? How many people have one computer on them? So between your cell phone, iPod, PDA, just one, but just one, not more. Okay, that's probably your cell phone. What about two? How many people have two computers? Okay, so that's about half of the class. What about three? Okay, that's probably 10%. Okay, maybe 20. What about four or more? Does anybody have four? Okay, four. Nice job. Okay, is your backpack very heavy? I guess you have a laptop, so. And you don't have to bring your computer to class. I heard a question. Just for the exam, make sure you bring a calculator. It's just going to make your life easier for the exam. But computers are not required to bring to class. They will be required at some point. And again, not only are computers everywhere, they do stuff that was previously impossible to do. So I'm going to just ask you guys what you think those things are. What is that? Do you know what that lion relates to computers? Can anybody think what that could be? Yeah? Yeah, exactly. It's a specific movie, actually, with a lion. Yes, Narnia. Well, that line does not exist. Okay, that line does not actually exist. It was created by a computer. And it's amazing to be able to look at a screen and see this lion that, kids run. They run around, they talk to. That's kind of obvious that it was generated by a computer. But, it looks very real. And there are a ton of computers that do that, that make that line, because it's just a very intense amount of computation. You probably know if you like a video game and you need a certain computer with certain power to a certain processor to be able to run that video game on your computer. This here is a little creepy. Just to warn you, it's a surgery. It's not performed by computers, but the surgeon is actually far away on a different continent. And it can, it can actually remotely control the computer, so the computer can perform the surgery. And obviously, computers know a lot of stuff, so there's a lot of things that the computer already knows, but they don't trust computers that much at this point. You have the iPhone, which is, probably I should change the slide, because it's kind of outdated. But Google, right? Google has changed the face of the internet dramatically. So Without computers, it would be impossible for Google to work. And so I would like to show this video. It's about Superman, the dad of Superman, Marlon Brando. He died in 2004, and they needed him to say a few words. They needed him in a scene in Superman Returns, but he was already dead. So what they did is, I will show you what they did. Let's see if I can make this full screen. And hopefully, this will work. I don't know if there's sound. You should have been able to hear some. Okay, the sound is not very important. So I'm going to walk you through what happens, kind of. So they took one previous movie that they had made where his eyes were moving the same way they would move if they would say, if he were to say, he was supposed to say, you do not know me, or something like that. And so they just took a scene of an existing movie where his eyes moved in a way that was acceptable. They took his you know, mask, and they took that mask, that general mask, and they mapped it on his face so that they are able to capture his facial features. And they actually comment there. And I'm going to send you this link, and you're going to be able to look at it if you want. They also needed him from a different angle. So they're able, now that they mapped his face on this model, they're able to move him around and turn him. And so, you know, they're working on the different shapes and, you know, the light, the way the light works. Now they're taking his mouth, and they're able to figure out, according to the phonemes in the whatever they wanted him to say, what his mouth should look like, how his mouth should move. So they figured that out. They mapped it on his face. Now they need to do the corrections. They put the color back. You know, they arrange his teeth are, you know, too white, so they change his teeth to look normal. And so, you know, they work on the textures. They say, you know, the texture looks rubbery, all kinds of things. It's pretty funny. Stuff that I would never think about. But people who do this kind of job need to be careful. And so, you know, all those steps to make his mouth look for real. At this point, his mouth looks rubbery, so that's not good. They also take the part of the mouth from the original picture, the original movie, and they kind of work so that it looks nice and smooth. They figure, you know, they make sure that it works from all the different angles. And now they have Superman's dad. That's kind of creepy. They have Superman's dad saying, "You do not remember me." They put him in a crystal, of course. And at this point, well, it's not yet, but yeah. They make him look like he's in a crystal, and then I'm going to wait until the where you can actually see the scene from the movie. And I think that's it.
Alright.
So that involves, so basically they were able to have in their movie somebody was already dead by technology, which was pretty cool. So this was one of the questions. What would be computer science, if you were to summarize it in a word, what would that be? And so a lot of people, you know, how many people think it's, I should use the clickers, but how many people think it should be programming, if you were to summarize it in a word? Well, I'm not going to embarrass you. All right. It's actually reduction. Computer science is the basic idea in computer science is you have a problem and you figure out a way to divide that problem into smaller problems that maybe you can solve. And if you cannot solve those smaller problems, you keep doing that. You keep dividing the problem into easier and easier problems until you're able to solve the smaller problems, and then you have, you know, this bigger problem is made up, these two smaller problems they can solve. You put those solutions together, you have your solution to the bigger problem. And so that's everything. So I'm gonna show you an example of reduction. Actually, a lot of what we're gonna talk about will be how to, you know, take a big problem, break it into smaller problems, and how that all works. So, for example, I can show you, but, oh, I can't. This thing here, that is what happens when, that's how networks happen. So, for example, if you're sitting at a computer and you are IMing with somebody who is in a different, I'm going to say a different continent, because it sounds very dramatic. You're using the software, and what the computer does, it's breaking it up. All these different layers, each layer breaks the information down into smaller and smaller and simpler things until you reach electric impulses, right? So that information needs to be carried through a wire that will go under the ocean if your friend is, you know, in China, for example, and it will get sent on a wire, and that will be electricity. So the computer has to figure out how to break your little smiley face into, you know, simpler and simpler, how to represent that information and break it down into electricity, send it back. Your friend's computer will receive a whole bunch of electricity, and then it will go up, and all these layers, the same layers, each layer will know how to put together the information from the, you know, more basic layer, and they're going to be able to build up your little, you know, message, smiley, whatever that is. And so each of these layers communicates only with the layer above it or with the layer underneath it. And so that makes it very clean and very simple, and you're able to figure out if there's a problem, where did that problem happen. And so that is reduction. That is an example of reduction. There are a lot of examples. This part is what we will be talking about. We're going to be talking about, you know, we're actually going to take it the other way. We're going to go from the basic layer, from the physical stuff, from electric impulses, and we're going to build it up to applications and see how that works. So one example of reduction is barcodes. There are a lot of different kinds of barcodes, and most of the information is on Wikipedia, as usual, which is a little scary. But we will be talking about UPC-A, which is one type of barcode, which is made up of 12 digits. So if you look on your, you know, I'm sure everybody has a barcode. If this code is 12 digits, that's a UPC-A. It can be 5 digits, that's a different kind. We're going to be talking about the UPC-A today. And so every code is 12 numbers, 12 digits, 12 digits. And so why do we even care about barcodes? Why should we learn? Why is that interesting? Well, you can imagine a cashier, and what if this cashier is, you know, is also the person who owns the store? And the person who owns the store, which is the cashier, has 5 things in the store that they sell. Well, that would be easy to keep track of all the prices, right? Okay, I only have, you know, notebooks and bottles of water and pens and something else. Right? It's very easy to remember, this is $1, this is $2, whatever, right? Whatever the prices are. Well, what if they have 100 things? Maybe if they have 100 things, they will be able to keep track of the price. But as this number grows, and you know, you can imagine the grocery stores, it will be very, very hard for them to keep track. They would have to look it up all the time. What if the price changes? Things like that, right? And so now all they have to do today, you probably noticed, you just, you know, put your stuff on the counter, and they are on the, whenever they scan it, and they just go like this, and it goes beep, and it just tells you the price, right? And so, it, you know, they don't have to remember anything. They just have to, you know, pick up a bottle of water and scan it. And so that is very, very helpful. Now, so that's a computer, right there. And what it reads is, it's reading patterns of ink, basically. And so how does the computer figure out what it is? How does the computer figure the price? Well, it sees patterns of ink, and those patterns of ink actually make up 95 very, very small zeros and ones. And that is, if you stare at it, a one will be a very thin line, and a zero will be a very thin space. And those things, you know, if you have a one and one adjacent to each other, close to each other, that would be a thicker line, and so on. We're talking about this. Right now, you just have to, this is just to show that computers read ink, the ink becomes 95 little tiny little zeros and ones. Those tiny little zeros and ones are actually codes that get translated into 12 digits, which are the digits that you actually see. Computers cannot read those digits. Those are just for our benefit, whatever that is. And those 12 digits actually won't, we only need 11 digits. And those digits actually give us the type and manufacturer and what the product is. And so then the computer can go into its database. Oh yeah, this is this kind of water, 16 ounces, and it can go in there and see, I know what the price is because somebody entered it. And so they know exactly what price to charge you for it. So I have two examples here. One is Pond's Dry Skin Cream, 110 grams, whatever. This is all encoded in the little code that the computers read. And the manufacturer is Unilever. And there's also a bag of tags, name tags, the Hello, My Name Is kind, 100 labels by Avery. And so those two are going to be our examples. Now, we have an 11-digit number, right? So we're going to start with 11. We're not going to talk about the 12 digits right now. How many numbers can we make with 11 digits? Factorial, that's one answer. Okay, let's start small. If we have one... We have one spot, and this spot can be anything between 0 and 9. 0 to 9. How many numbers could we represent? How many numbers could we have?
10 numbers.
Okay, that's one spot. 10 numbers. How about two? So anything between 0, 0, 0, and 99, right? How many numbers is that? 100 numbers. What about three? 1,000. Okay, so what would be our answer? We have 11 digits. If we have 11 spots.
One with 11
zeros. Very, very well. Yes. So that's how many options we have. That's a lot of options. That's about 100 billion products that we can have. Okay? So we're not worried we're going to run out or anything like that. I think. We shouldn't be worried. So what do those digits mean? What do those numbers mean? Well, the first... does somebody have a UPC, actually, so I don't use my bottle? Can you look for a 12-digit number? 12-digit barcode. Okay. Don't tell me the number yet, okay? Oh, actually, tell me the first 11 digits, not the last digits.
Okay. Sure.
Was that 0?
Yeah, 0. 2 6 2 2 9 1 3 4 2
4 2 5 4 2 1 4 2 1. Okay, thank you. Okay, and then there's another digit that I'm not gonna talk about now. Right now I'm interested in 11 digits. So what the first digit, it just says what kind of product it is. And this is a very general, it's a little random actually. 0, 1, 6, 7, 8, or 9, it's most of them. If it's a 2, that's a store for store use. So if you go, for example, to the deli and they slice your cheese and they're going to have a barcode, that's going to have a 2 as the first digit. That's going to be a 2 right here. And a 3 are drugs by national drug code number. The last 5 digits, the next 5 digits are going to be. This is a number that is assigned to each manufacturer. So two different products by the same manufacturer will have the same 5-digit number right here. Okay? So you can check that. You can go to the store and look, make sure that's the case. If it's not, come back and let me know so I can stop spreading the lie. And the next 5 are going to be the products. So the manufacturer assigns these numbers, and they have 5 digits. How many products is that? With five spots, how many products can we make? Can we have? So that's one with how many zeros? 5 zeros. Okay, 100,000. That's correct. So every manufacturer can have 100,000 products. And so, for example. I put the code there for the Pond's Dry Skin Cream. You can see it's a 3. I'm just going to talk about the lower part. Oops. It's considered a drug, so the first digit will be 3. And then the next five digits, 05210, are the code, the ID for Unilever, which is the manufacturer. And then the next five digits are going to be, this is the national drug code for dry skin lotion. Okay, and you know, you can see the same for the labels. It's the same kind of thing. So 0 is the general product. 172782 is Avery, the code for that manufacturer. And Avery assigns that code for the labels, that specific label. And so now why do we need a 12 digit? So we need a 12 digit because what happens if we only keep 11 digits? There are some products that are very different, but they their code is only it's the same only except for one of the digits. So for example, those four that you can see on the screen have they're identical except for the second digit. And then what happens if you, this would probably be a problem if, you know, two of them were, had very different prices, and you were, you know, if they were confusing one for the other, you would be buying, I think it's very similar in price, but let's say one of them is very expensive, you would be charged a lot, right? And so that's a problem. So then you'll need a check digit. You will need something that, you know, you can, it's an extra digit, it doesn't give you a lot of information other than something went wrong. So here's how you compute the check digit. You take all the odd number, so you have your code here. And I'm going to guess the check digit now. All the odd number positions, you have to add up all those digits. So I'm going to underline all the odd number positions. This is the first digit, the third one, the fifth one, the 7th, 9th, and 11th digits. Okay? And I'm going to add all those up. It's going to be, I'm going to say odd equals, so that's 6, 8, 9, 13, 14. Okay? Then even positions. And make sure you don't include the check digits here. Okay? Because sometimes I have to do that. So the even numbers are the second digit, the fourth, the sixth, everything that's not underlined, the eighth and the tenth. So I have 2 plus 2 is 4, 13, 16, 18. That gives me 18. Okay. Now what I do, I said there, step one is add the digits in the odd numbered positions and multiply them by 3. So I'm multiplying this by 3, and this gives me 42. And then I add the even, step two, add the digits in the even number position. So that's 18. I'm going to add these two up, give me 60. And then I'm going to subtract the result from the next higher multiple of 10. So it still happens this is a multiple of 10. So I don't need to do anything. It's going to be 0. So I'm going to 60 minus 60 equals 0. Is 0 the last digit?
Yeah.
0 is the last digit, right? And you can do this with any UPC code. That's how you determine what the last digit is. Okay? So, again, you take the code, make sure you leave out the last digit, you add up all the odd position numbers, you multiply by 3, you add the even numbers, and then you add them up together and you get... whatever you get, you subtract from the next multiple. If this was a 62, then I would say, what's the next multiple of 10? 70. 70 minus 62 is 8. And that is my check digit. Okay? Okay, that's all for today. We're going to pick it up from here next time.
Thanks for coming.